You've been the Texas state climatologist since 2000. What exactly is a state climatologist?
It's basically what you make of it. There's an association of state climatologists that specifies the basic characteristics. You've got your main role is to investigate and interpret and basically help apply climate knowledge to the problems of a specific state. Sometimes that includes data gathering, product generation, interpretation of climate forecasts, outreach. We do a lot of data requests fulfillment. We do a lot of public talks and that sort of thing. The whole program got started back in the 1970s when the National Weather Service, in their semi-infinite wisdom, decided that climate services were not going to have any value in the future. Until that point, state climatologists were federal employees. Since then, states have gradually picked up the slack, and so now they're about 48 out of 50 states have their own state climatologists, which are generally in land-grant universities.
And is it a paid position by the state of Texas?
The state of Texas doesn't directly pay it. I get a supplement of a few thousand dollars a year for the extra administrative work, and the university also supplies me with a budget for student and staff, but otherwise I don't get any direct state funding.
So it's more an honorary position, so to speak.
Honorary in the sense that it's the only thing I do that sounds more impressive than it actually is.
Right. So let's talk about the climate. We haven't had, maybe this is more the weather, but we haven't had rain here in Central Texas for 2 months. What is causing that, and do you have any sense for how long it will go on?
Well, we went into this fall and winter with the expectation it was going to be dry because we had unusually cold sea surface temperatures in the eastern tropical Pacific. It's a phenomenon called La Nina. It's essentially the opposite of El Nino, which has warmer temperatures there. And that affects the thunderstorm pattern over the whole of the Pacific, and that in turn affects the jet stream pattern and so forth. And the bottom line is when that happens, most of the time, Texas and, for that matter, just about all the southern United States ends up having a relatively warm and relatively dry winter. And so that part was not a surprise. It's especially hit hard in central Texas. Most of the panhandle is doing fine, but otherwise, the past couple of months have been dry, and we're looking at the numbers. It seems like in some places it may very well be October, November were the driest on record for this past year.
Is that going to likely to continue, that dry winter, for a while?
Well, it's unlikely it'll stay this dry. I don't expect every month to be record-setting dryness, but it's certainly likely we'll have below normal rainfall going onward. I've looked at a few of the cases in the past where we had exceptionally strong La Nina events like we do now, and it seemed like for them it was drier in the fall than it was in the spring, so that's a little bit of a glimmer of hope, but it's still not going to be a particularly wet winter, even if that pattern holds true.
What about the broader effects of climate change here in Texas? I'm assuming you think this is happening, and is it actually happening already?
Well, climate always changes, so the trivial answer is yes, it's happening. Let me just talk about what the climate has done, then we can talk about some of the causes. The temperatures across the state over the past century or so were gradually increasing until about the 1950s. They reached a peak during our drought years in the 50s. Then they dropped considerably. Some of the coldest weather was in the 70s. And since then, they've generally been rising. Temperatures across the state are about 2 degrees warmer now, Fahrenheit, than they were in the mid-70s on average. Some of that might be due to changes in urbanization and so forth, but they've tried to correct for that. So most of it's, I expect, is real. And the overall pattern just sort of vaguely follows the global pattern for temperature change, which was warming in the early part of the century and then fairly flat in the middle and warming since then. So it seems that part of that is due to the increase in greenhouse gases. And computer models that are just atmospheric models that are run with the historical sea surface temperatures give this same pattern. So basically, you got this sequence of events: the warming, the change in the radiative properties of the atmosphere are affecting the ocean temperatures, which in turn affect things locally. Now there's a lot of natural variability that goes on top of that, so it's not really possible at this point to say what fraction is due to global warming, but based on what we know, it seems like a significant fraction is.
And you have predicted, correct me if I'm wrong, that temperatures in Texas, average temperatures, will rise several degrees over the next 50 years. Is that right?
Not quite right. What I said specifically is that the model projections, the models that are run for the IPCC, which are projections for the climate with increased carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, they have the temperatures rising in Texas from the present by an additional anywhere from 1 to 4 or 5 degrees by the middle of the 21st century. And the rate of rise that's projected there is similar to how rapidly the temperatures have been rising since the 1970s, so it's at least plausible that could happen. Part of the problem is there's a big range in that forecast, so it could go up a little or it could go up a lot. Even a little bit would put us warmer than anything we saw in the 20th century. But those are just considering one factor involved in climate change. You'd also have to consider the effects of aerosols and volcanic activity and solar intensity and the Pacific Decadal Oscillation and all sorts of things that we can't predict. So we don't know what the temperature is going to be like in 2050. What the projections tell us is basically the effect of greenhouse gases alone would give us that much warming. And the other factors could have just as big an influence, but it could go in either direction. Maybe they'll cancel the greenhouse warming and we'll stay about the same, or they could be a positive factor on top of it. Those are the things we can't predict. The part that we do have fairly good confidence in is the greenhouse gases, and they say that the expectation is temperatures will be warmer.
And your view is that these greenhouse gases are, that the increase is largely caused by humans?
The increase is definitely caused by humans.
And in that potential warming model caused by greenhouse gases within Texas, is there likely to be any regional variation?
The regional variation will come from the other effects, not the greenhouse gases per se. The greenhouse gas effect is going to be fairly uniform, but the specific pattern of temperature change depends a lot on the specifics of how the ocean temperature patterns evolve. Even over the past century, the rise has not been uniform across the state. East Texas is still cooler than it was in the early part of the 20th century, whereas South Texas is quite a bit warmer than it has been. So there's already quite a bit of variation. And likewise, that variation is not predictable either. So it may be that East Texas will catch up, or it may be that the pattern will persist. We just don't know.
Texas is the state probably most resistant to implementing federal carbon dioxide or greenhouse gas regulation that's actually coming in next year, starting to come in from the EPA. Do you have a view of the petitions filed by the Attorney General that dispute the international science behind the EPA's actions?
I have several views, depending on what aspect of the issue we're addressing. I can't address the specific legal argument that the Attorney General is making because I'm not a lawyer. They're basically just to restate what they're saying that the EPA is obligated by law to do its own review rather than rely on outside reviews like the IPCC. And that may be a good argument or not. I don't know. However, it's probably unlikely that the EPA would come up with something much different from the IPCC because, based on my reading of their report, it's pretty good as far as the science goes. I agree with about 95% of what is written. It's not perfect, but it's about as good as it's going to get. So I don't think that having the EPA do its own independent review from Grand Jura would change things other than perhaps delaying implementation by a couple of years.
Is there anything in that 5% that you specifically disagree with, or is that just kind of a general comment?
Well, it's general based on the parts I know. The mistake they made about the Himalayan glaciers was fairly shoddy, and I actually publicized that in my blog about a month before it hit the presses. I wasn't the one to discover it, but that was basically a part of consequence of scientists talking outside their area of expertise. If you go to the part of the report that's written by glaciologists, they got things right. So it varies a bit. And then for some controversial subjects, you tend to have not necessarily a perfect balance of scientific viewpoints among the people writing things. So, for example, with respect to the impact of changes in hurricanes, I think they were the IPCC report goes a little bit farther in terms of hurricane changes than the present scientific consensus has it.
Have you had any pushback from politicians in the state on your work?
No, I haven't. I've testified before the legislature a couple times in connection with particular bills, such as one in the last session that would have required us to evaluate climate change adaptation plans by state agencies. But certainly no pushback in terms of what I'm doing as far as interpretation of climate science and outreach. I'm a little bit concerned about some of the things I see on websites from some elected representatives about the whole of climate science being a hoax or things like that. There's a lot of things that are disputable about what's going to happen in the future with climate change, and there are a lot of things about how the climate system works that we know very well, and I think it's very important to distinguish between those two things. I really want to make sure that the people who are setting policy understand what the knowns are and what the unknowns are.
Is there anything Texas should be doing to prepare for climate change?
Well, the good news about preparation is that climate change is a slow process. The impacts are uh, the the impacts happen relatively suddenly, though. For example, with sea level rise, there's two main factors in Texas affecting sea level rise. The most important one is land surface subsidence through freshwater pumping and other factors. And then the second in importance is the global sea level rise due to climate change. But, you know, the cause doesn't really matter for adaptation purposes. But where sea level rise has an impact is not the gradual upcreep of the shoreline, but the sudden change of shoreline that's associated with the major hurricanes and other storms that reconfigure the coast. So the manifestation of sea level rise on Texas is going to be essentially not much happening for a long time, and then suddenly a big change, and then not much happening again, and so forth. Infrastructure needs to basically plan for the net effects of sea level rise for anything that's supposed to last for decades, such as major ports and shipping facilities have to be able to adjust for the likelihood that over the next several decades the local sea level is going to be increasing by a foot or more, and that's likely to continue.
Speaking of, go ahead.
Sorry. The other big adaptation is probably going to take place in terms of agriculture. As the climate changes, the crops that are viable or most profitable change also. That sort of thing farmers have been adjusting to for years. There were periods of time when citrus was growable in certain areas and periods of time when it wasn't. Farmers, I think, can be on their toes and forward-looking about this and expect a rise in temperatures and sort of plan for that. In other words, things that are presently marginal because of cold temperatures in the wintertime will gradually become more and more viable with time. And conversely, plants or agricultural products that have difficulty with the heat can be expected to have more difficulty in the future. So a change in crop strategies to stay on top of the evolving climate will pay off.
I meant to ask, hurricanes, are we likely to see more of those with climate change?
Presently, the models that at least can roughly simulate hurricanes come up with about the same number of hurricanes or even fewer hurricanes. So the present thinking is that they're probably not going to become more frequent in the future. However, the ones that do develop will have the potential to become more intense because of changes in the water vapor content of the atmosphere. So the present short answer is perhaps fewer storms, and some of them, though, would become more intense. Just like temperatures, though, even more so than temperatures, the details of that pattern will vary from region to region because there are other things besides temperatures that affect where hurricanes form and how they intensify. So for any given location, at this point, it's literally too early to tell whether net effect of hurricanes will increase or decrease.
Last question. How did you get interested in climate science? I mean, as a kid, did you gaze at the clouds and say, I want to do this? Or how did that happen?
Well, if one decides whether a person's a climate scientist by whether they've published any research on climate, I became a climate scientist about 3 years ago, which was a while after I became the state climatologist. I got involved in becoming a state climatologist because I saw the connection between weather observations and weather and climate forecasts and data archives. My background is more in terms of weather forecasting, fronts, storms, floods, that sort of thing. And I didn't really expect, or at least I didn't project far enough into the future as to how important changing climate was going to be. So I was expecting state climatologists to be a fairly mundane job about helping to improve the data record and archiving information and so forth. But obviously, it's become more and more important from a policy standpoint. And so I've educated myself quite a bit on the basics of climate science and also the existing controversies, and so that I feel at least I'm in a position to provide good and objective advice to anybody who needs information on climate change. And I guess part of that comes from my background, and my doctoral degree is from MIT, and two of the faculty members on my committee were Carrie Emanuel and Richard Lindzen, who are presently basically not talking to each other because of their opposite views on climate change. So I've seen it from both sides.
Right. Great. Well, anything else we should talk about?
No. Well, let's see. There's something I haven't mentioned, so let me mention it. We talked about temperature changing in Texas. Precipitation is also changing. People may have seen reports that the southwestern United States, including Texas, is getting drier and going to become another Dust Bowl. There's some element of truth in that, but not a whole lot. Reality is a little more complicated. Rainfall in Texas has actually been steadily increasing over the past century. It's about 10 or 15% more rainfall per year now than there was at the beginning of the 20th century, which is a fairly large amount. And the projections for rainfall change in the future from climate models are some have it wetter, most have it drier, but none of the changes are as big as what we've already seen. So good news in that regard is you don't really have to worry too much about what climate change will do to rainfall, because rainfall is already changing by a lot more than that. The impact on water supply is going to come from the change in temperature, which increases evaporation, increases water demand, and increases the need for water both by plants and by cities. So in the same sense that sea level rise is a second order effect on the global sea level rise is a second order effect for what's happening locally, the changing climate is going to reduce water supplies, but that's a second order effect compared to the increase in population, which is having a massive effect on demand for water. But as we know more and more about climate change, I think it becomes more and more important that we plan for the effect of changing climate as well as plan for the effect of a changing population.